and they made me all right, welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. This is episode, I'm not sure of the podcast. We'll see what order Chester decides to post these in because I'm recording about four in a row right now. But we have our 15th ranked team. I ranked the 49ers, we're about to talk about 14th. Chester was a tiny bit lower on them, had him at 17, end up in the middle at 15. We have a repeat, returning champion, I guess they'd say on Jeopardy, a repeat guest from last year, the great Oscar Aparicio from the Better Rivals 49ers podcast. Oscar, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. How are you?
Great. Last year, you know, I say this a couple times a year, like, we do 32 of these rapid fire. And listen, the podcast just has to happen. Like, it doesn't have to be good. We just need to do 32 of them. So it's easy to forget from year to year. Like, you remember if someone's incredible and you remember if someone is, like, awful. And then, but I don't really, like, for 31 and 32, I don't really remember, like, which one are good. But I happen to remember last year that a lot of people, like, we did a poll in our Facebook group, like, what was the best one? And I think you did very well in that poll. So this was one of our better guests from last year. I was also checking out your Twitter account. Not to brag, you're verified. It's a really solid follow. I know we have a bunch of Niners fans in particular who listen, Oscar's a really good 49ers follow, so I definitely recommend. And you're at Better Rivals on Twitter.
You got it. I appreciate it.
You have some good takes. Here's the thing. Let's be honest for a second before we get into the Niners. Like, it's hard to follow essentially a beat writer, like someone who tweets 10, 12 times a day about a team you don't root for, unless, like, your job is following the NFL. Because if you do that times 32, that's your whole feed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, so I find the same thing to be true.
So I almost have to tab somebody like you and check them out, because I'm a big fan of, like, only following 200 people or less on Twitter. Because otherwise, I feel like if you follow 576 people, I feel like a little bit doesn't become your full-time job, just like checking Twitter when you follow that many people.
I do check Twitter a lot.
I live on Twitter too.
It's become my full-time job.
Yeah, it's like, you know, listen, I'm not on it less than anybody, but I do think it's like, I'm a big proponent of, like, more than 250. Yeah, it's like, it's almost a chore. Even though, let's be honest, we mute a lot of the people we follow.
Well, there's like two things, right? One is I look at people like Doug Farrar, and Doug Farrar follows probably like 1,000 people, mm-hmm. and he finds some of the most deepest, darkest parts of Twitter, because I imagine that his eyeballs are glued to his Twitter feed at all times.
Oscar, I'm sure you've spun some gold and he's missed it because he follows 1,000 people.
It's entirely possible. But here's the other secret. The other secret is that I know that myself and other folks that follow a lot of people use mm-hmm. lists very heavily.
Yeah.
And so I have a must see list. And when I'm tight on time and I just want to see the things that I know are important, there's uh-huh. probably a list of maybe 125 people that are on that must follow list. Mm-hmm. And I just check that.
He's got Twitter tears.
Yeah, Twitter tears, man. They're not the kind that you cry when you go undefeated in the preseason and then go completely defeated in the regular season, a la the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
But they are tears nonetheless.
Yeah, before we even get into the Niners, I wanted to ask you a question, because I was checking out your podcast, and you went pretty heavy on your NFC West opponents the last couple of weeks. I don't think you've done the Cardinals, but you had podcasts dedicated to the Seahawks and Rams, right?
Yep. Yeah, the Cardinals one happens this week.
Yeah, it would be funnier if you just skipped it and, like, just trash talking. Like, you guys kind of suck. You know,
what's funny is it's the hardest to get a Cardinals person on the show, because whenever we've done the division,
you are preaching to the proverbial choir.
The Cardinals one is always the toughest one to get, and usually kind of the dullest.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult.
Oh boy, you have no idea. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but you could check our archives.
Yeah.
Woo. The listeners know what we're talking about. Yeah, you know what? The Cardinals, I mean, listen, it bears out, like, in their attendance. They have the fewest fans outside of maybe the Jaguars. They have the fewest fans because they're not, like, the Saints. New Orleans is a very small city at this point, but, like, they're kind of a national team. You know, Green Bay is not really a city at all, but, again, they're a national team. Like, you look at the really small places. The Titans are a new-ish team without a major fan base. The Jaguars, the Bucks, and the Cardinals. Like, they just don't have a lot of fans. Also, I'd say the LA teams at this point, like, don't really have any fans. Like, do the Chargers have fans? I doubt it. Like, I imagine the Chargers have, like, the least followers of any of any NFL team on Twitter.
I imagine the Chargers, it ends up being real confusing when someone shows up to a soccer stadium to watch a football game and then mm-hmm. Philip Rivers starts throwing balls and they're just like, I don't understand what's happening. I came here with my Vuvuzela and my Mexican flag and these guys aren't even kicking the ball. I'm leaving. That's how I imagine like 20% of all of the Chargers games go.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals have the fewest Twitter followers of the 32 teams. Fun fact, in all of professional sports, it's the Miami Marlins, who I hate. Okay, so Chester and I, my co-host, who's very absent today, we ranked the divisions a few episodes ago. And I had the NFC West as the best division in football, and he was yelling at me. So, am I crazy? Is he crazy? What do you think about that?
I don't think that you're crazy. I do. It kind of depends on the criteria. Most fun to watch or best teams.
No. Come on. We're serious guys here. Fun to watch.
Hey, man, you never know. I do think the NFC.
It's basically potential. How many teams could make the playoffs? How many teams could win the division? How many teams could be in the Super Bowl? You know, what would they do against the hypothetical, you know, like, are they going to demolish whatever division they play? I think for you guys, it's the AFC North this year.
Yeah, it's something. I think it is the North because we do play the Browns. No, I don't know that we play the Browns or the Steelers this year. I don't know their schedule. I don't have it memorized. I just go week to week, man. I just go where the schedule takes me. I lose one week at a time.
So one week at a time. It's funny because I'm a little down on the Seahawks, but I still like I'm higher than most people on the Cardinals, and a lot of people are expecting the Rams to fall back to earth, and I'm not because like I am such a McVay guy. And I really like your team, so that adds up to being one of the best divisions, if not the best one.
Yeah, I do think that because of the play of the quarterbacks, you will see the NFC West be a really, really tough division. I don't think at this point you can take a division in the AFC because the AFC just plays inferior football outside of like two or three teams to the NFC. And so when you look at the NFC conferences...
Yeah, you can make a case that the four... Chester did this, I didn't, but Chester had the four worst divisions as the four AFC divisions.
Yeah, and you know what? He's not. I don't think that he's wrong. I think that there's a case to be made there. And when you think of the divisions within the NFC, I think when you look at a team distribution, like you could see the NFC West being the black and blue division all over again, which is what it was in the Harbaugh Carroll years at the height of the Seahawks Niners rivalry, where it was just going to be a bloodbath every time you face someone in division. You could see that being the case again this year. And I think the NFC South. And the NFC North both have cases there in terms of being really top to bottom. Kind of the highs may be higher, but the lows might be lower. But I don't think that the NFC West as being the best division is too off base.
All right, let's talk about the 49ers in particular. I think if you asked the average football fan on the street and said, all right, Jimmy Garoppolo ended the year undefeated, what were his touchdown to INT ratio? Everyone would say 12-2, 13-1. You know, 100-0. But in reality, we know that it was 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, albeit with a very good completion percentage. So we had these 5 games that were ultimately meaningless. People are basically anointing Jimmy Garoppolo to the Hall of Fame. He signs a contract that was, I think, the largest. Was it the largest the day he signed it? Contract in the history
yes.
of the league?
For 2 weeks, he was the highest paid yes. quarterback in NFL history.
Yeah, for 2 weeks, he earns the title. They could have basically given him the super like franchise tag every year for 3 years and saved money. But I guess, in my opinion, they probably had some deal with the agent. Let's actually backtrack to last year for a second. I still think that this whole thing stinks. I'm thrilled that the Patriots, because I'm a Jets fan, traded Garoppolo for a bag of balls. But there something had to happen there, right? Like the agent who represents both Brady and Garoppolo, I'm assuming has Brady's interest because he's been with him for 20 years and like he built his house and everything. And sort of like just says, all right, you know, you basically need to commit to Brady to you know, keep him and you need to ship Garoppolo out of town. Belichick ships Garoppolo to Kyle Shanahan because Mike Shanahan, like, I don't know, opened the door for him once in a restaurant or something. And now you guys like magically have this superstar quarterback for 1 second round pick. My team just paid 3 second round picks to move up 3 spots to get a guy. And I mean, I don't know. Like, do you think there was like something nefarious going on? Like, how do you get Jimmy Garoppolo for a second round pick?
You get him because it's a relationship business. Football is still a relationship business. And I think we know a couple of things. One, we don't know for a fact that the Wickersham story about the Patriots turmoil is like 100% true, but I
it's
think
crazy, right? Like that's all we know about it, and that story could be totally bogus. It's really nuts.
It could be, but I do think maybe if not every part of that story is accurate, I do think there's probably a little fire to that smoke. Mm-hmm. But I do also know that Bill Belichick is a big fan of Garoppolo. It's why he didn't trade him for so long. And I do think he wants to see Garoppolo succeed. We also know that the Cleveland Browns offered more in a trade to New England for Garoppolo, and he ended up still sending him off to San Francisco. Why did he do that? I think he did that because he wanted Garoppolo to succeed, and he knew that he had a better chance at succeeding with a coach like Kyle Shanahan in a system like San Francisco's, which is one of the 2 to 3 most innovative and best offenses in the NFL currently. I think it's not a crazy case to say that the McVay, Peterson, Shanahan triumvirate of offenses are the 3 best, most well-constructed offenses in the NFL.
Yeah.
And so I think when you're looking at Belichick, I mean, Belichick still texts Jimmy Garoppolo after every win. That's I think how much Belichick wanted Garoppolo to be his guy.
Important to the league right now. Hold on.
Yeah. And so I think overall it's one of those things where Bill Belichick was like, look, you know, an extra second round pick at the end of the day, like it's not going to matter to me in the grand scheme of things because he's playing long ball. He can probably move around on the draft or move around in the draft and pick up that extra second with that second round pick anyway. So like, I'm going to do this guy a solid. I'm going to make sure that he's taken care of, and I'm going to send him to a place where he succeeds and go forth, my child, into the NFL wild. And I think that's why.
Listen, you just got potentially like the greatest gift ever handed in your lap. We ranked QBs. I had Garoppolo 15th, Chester had him 20th. It's a pretty silly exercise to rank him against guys who've played 4 or 5 seasons in the league at this point. From what you've seen last season and now, like, do you think Garoppolo is like already about to become like a not a top tier, not a Brady Rodgers Breeze tier, but like a second tier quarterback, like with Wilson, with like Roethlisberger on his best day, with I don't know.
So there's a couple. Know, there's
Matt
a couple.
Ryan, Deshaun Watson.
There's a couple like presumptions in your in your premises there that I would like to deconstruct, because one. Okay. I think that when you talk about Wilson as a second tier player, I already think your tiers are screwed up, because Russell Wilson is an elite quarterback, and I do think that the elite cluster.
Well, when I say second tier, I'm literally putting him fourth in the league, just behind like 3 immortal players. So I'm not insulting Russell. You've seen this. You're very on NFL Twitter. Like there are like lunatics. Most of them work for Sports Illustrated who will rank Russell Wilson.
Yeah, it's
14th.
Weird.
I'm not
weird.
Doing that. No, it's not weird. There's reasons. Listen, I'm not a Russell Wilson hater. I'm a big Russell Wilson guy. When I say tier one, I'm just saying Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, 3 guys who are
like first ballot
players.
Hall of Famers that have been.
Yeah. So we're not knocking Wilson. I think he's the first
Breeze, Brady, Rodgers, right? Like those are your guys, right?
Sure.
I do think that there's actually been a lot of really good work done by the analytics team at Pro Football Focus talking about quarterback clustering. And quarterback clustering is really cool because basically it says let's figure out the clumps of quarterbacks that stick together and then rate or rank where those clusters are. So it uses a lot of really, really good inputs to get to some pretty unique and instructive quarterback clusters. And they've broken it down. And in that first cluster, and this is, of course, just for 2017. So this is not like overall, this is what they're going to do forever. This is just 2017. Cluster one, 3 players in the top tier. Obviously, Tom Brady is one of them. Who do you think the other 2 are?
Well, it's not Rodgers didn't play. You're saying, correct. I'm going to say Russell Wilson.
That is also correct.
Yeah,
one more.
Pro Football Focus likes him. There aren't a lot of options. I don't think they loved Matt Ryan last year.
He is the third one. He is indeed the third one.
Okay.
So what they do, and the way they cluster it is they look at their performance over a season, and they look at their percentage of positively graded throws, negatively graded throws, what they call NFL throws, which are the throws that are the most difficult to make and usually have the longest distance from quarterback to catch, whether or not they throw interceptable passes, because this is one thing I think that stats like quarterback rating often get wrong.
Of course.
And every team has seen it where their quarterback throws a great ball. It slips right through Dez Bryant's hands and gets intercepted. And that's
literally every football fan has seen that exact scenario 20 times. By the way, you're speaking to someone who has a co-host who has something called CQBR. He has his own Chester quarterback rating because he doesn't trust any sort of QBR or quarterback rating.
That's great. I think that's awesome, right? And so when you think of what they've done in terms of tiers or clusters, right, they say, okay, that's the top tier. These are the quarterbacks that at least in 2017 performed the best across the things that a quarterback needs to do well. And then cluster two and cluster three are kind of even. It's just a different flavor of quarterback. Cluster two is going to be your second tier where they don't make as many wow plays and they don't throw the ball as long, but they also don't take very many risks. This is like Alex Smith is the poster boy. Well, pre-2017 Alex Smith, right? Before he discovered that he could throw the ball more than 15 yards. This was the perfect like Alex Smith thing where he's not a bad quarterback. He's below that kind of elite first tier, but he just doesn't do a lot of wild things, but is not going to lose you the game. These are your Ben Roethlisbergers. Believe it or not, Drew Brees was actually in this area last year, but that's just because he had Alvin Kamara and a great running game last year that he hadn't had before. Cluster three is the poster boy for this is going to be Jameis Winston. And Jameis Winston is like wow plays, like, oh my God, I can't believe he made that throw. That's ridiculous. And then, oh my God, he threw it straight to a linebacker. What the hell is going on? That is cluster three, right? Both those clusters are about even.
Jameis Winston is going to be out of the NFL in 2 years.
Yeah, you know that. I don't think that it's that bad because he's good enough that I think teams will continue to take flyers on him.
Ooh, he would be a bad guy to have as a backup, though. He would be a rough guy in the old clubhouse.
And then you get other clusters that, you know, whatever. They're just players that aren't very, very good. If the crappy thing for Jimmy Garoppolo, and this is the number one issue, is that his sample size last year, even in the five games in which he played in, didn't qualify him for a lot of the clustering that PFF modeled with all these quarterbacks. But if he would have had enough snaps to qualify, guess what cluster he would have been in?
By I hope one after this.
Absolutely. He would have been in cluster one. So he would have been one of the top three or top four quarterbacks in the NFL when you look at what he does in terms of skill at dominating the intermediate area of the field, which is the throw that he excels at. That crosser over the middle of the field at about 10 to 17 yards is where he makes his money. If you watch the preseason game last week, he's now getting a better deep ball because that was where he sucked last year. But this year, he's been working on that deep ball. He's got a full year in the system, and he put it on display with a big long throw to Marquise Goodwin, which, by the way, if you're listening to this and you're looking for a wide receiver that's going to get you some value in the middle rounds of fantasy, draft Marquise Goodwin. Trust me, you'll be happy later.
Yeah, we have a crazy fantasy league, which is League of Leagues, three sports, baseball, basketball, football.
Yep.
And Chester, who's, again, not here. Chester would have been nice if you were here because your name's come up a lot of times. Has Marquise Goodwin and is treating him as if he was like Adam Thielen. Like Chester is so high on Goodwin, 17 yards per catch last season, which is absurd. Goodwin's a weird guy because he is, he was a long jumper, right? If I'm not mistaken, because I'm an Olympics nerd, Goodwin was such a good long jumper that the year of the Rio Olympics, he was the best long jumper in the world. He just didn't make the Olympic team because he had a bad day. And it's one day and you qualify. But he beat the Olympic gold medalist. That's sort of the kind of speed and athlete Goodwin is. Essentially, like one of the best athletes on the planet, probably the best athlete in the NFL. Just in terms of raw speed, maybe the fastest guy in the league.
Yeah, his speed is on another level. And so I think when you think of how good, if the question is how good is Jimmy Garoppolo really, I think we still have to see more because sample size, of course, is an issue. But based on where he's trending right now, he's trending at being a top five quarterback and in that elite cluster. And I think that's exactly what you want out of your quarterback. Now, whether or not he ends up being there and being able to sustain that over the course of the year, you know, I don't know. It's not like he's a perfect prospect by any stretch. His deficiencies with the deep ball being, of course, the biggest knock outside of sample size. But I think that he was that good over the end of the year. And now he was that good, mind you, not even knowing what the hell play he was calling in the huddle.
Right.
There are times where he was just saying words and he was like, I actually don't understand half this play call, but I do understand this half and I see what I'm getting to that side of the field. So I'm going to go ahead and just run the concept to this side of the field. And it's just phenomenal. It's really, he does the things that you want your quarterback to do well. He gets rid of the ball on time and quickly. He processes information effectively. He's got great pocket feel and he's mobile enough to get out of trouble when he needs to. So I think the future is positive for him. And even if he doesn't progress anywhere from where he is right now, he's still, I think, a good enough quarterback to win a Super Bowl with.
Okay. Love it. Now, let me drop a little what I think is a hot take, but maybe you'll agree. I'm not sure if we're just talking about running backs, receivers, and tight ends. I'm not sure there's a team in the league that would happily switch with you guys, that would happily do a complete skill position trade. I mean, there's just, listen, Goodwin's fast, but we've seen him kind of like fade away. Listen, if Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be a top five quarterback, Goodwin's going to have a big year just because he's going to be the most targeted guy like he was last year. McKinnon, to me, the signing was, I mean, obviously it was too much money, but he's already hurt. I don't know if Matt Breda excites you. You know, Celek and Kittle are probably average tight ends. And Pierre Garçon's 1,000 years old. Are people getting excited about Dante Pettis?
I think people are a little excited about Dante Pettis, but I think you may be right in that there's not a lot of people outside of San Francisco that are quote unquote excited about the skill positions. Mm-hmm. But I would say that all of those people don't know how to scout skill positions and don't understand what Kyle Shanahan's doing with his offense. Mm-hmm. I think that the wide receiver position for San Francisco is probably one of the more underrated wide receiving cores in the entire NFL. Mm-hmm. You talk about Marquise Goodwin, and we saw what he did over the last 8 weeks of the season after Pierre Garçon went out with an injury. Now, mind you, that in the first eight weeks, when we had people like CJ Beathard, don't call me beat hard, as the quarterback who replaced Brian Hoyer, who is a career backup at this point, all of those quarterbacks combined still had Pierre Garçon on pace for a 1,000-yard season. And when you look at Marquise Goodwin over the last 8 weeks of the season, he was a top five graded PFF receiver over that time. So he is good enough to be a really, really good number one. He's not just a speed guy, and he was able to prove that last year. The only reason he didn't get over 1,000 yards was because he got concussed in that week 17 game against the Rams. But he was something like 30 or 60 yards away from having a 1,000-yard season, which, of course, his previous high was just over 400 yards in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So I think Marquise Goodwin, you know, you just talked about how athletic he is, how fast he is. One of Kyle Shanahan's favorite shot plays that he calls when he's, you know, about the 40, 35-yard line is Yankee, where you've got a deep post and then a crosser underneath. And Marquise Goodwin just ate on this concept year after year after year. And he's going to continue to do that, but he's also going to be able to attack the intermediate area with kind of some hitch concepts that Shanahan likes to call his compliments. You've got Pierre Garçon, who's effectively your I've got vice for hands, dude. He's your possession guy.
Only 32. I guessed 70, so I was off by that.
Yeah, sure. He's going to be like Anquan Boldin, where the thing that makes him good is not his speed, it's his power.
You can age. The receivers aren't aging well, like most positions in the NFL, but if you're not incredibly speed reliant, if you're
exactly
like Boldin,
that's exactly
Jericho
right.
Cotchery, like you came in slow anyway, then what's the matter? You know,
that's exactly right. And so I think that he still has a role. And then you look at Trent Taylor, who is drafted in the fifth round. He's incredibly shifty. He had a perfect quarterback rating when you threw to him on the slant over the course of the year. The dude is just an underneath catching machine. And Garoppolo, because he's used to the Wes Welkers of the world, he knows how to utilize someone like him. Trent Taylor, someone who got a touchdown in the preseason game against Houston last week. He also provides some solid kind of stuff there. And what you see that Shanahan's doing is he's not obsessed with this, I need a quote-unquote number one receiver. What he values are receivers that can separate in a couple different ways. Trent Taylor separates with shiftiness underneath. You've got Marquise Goodwin, who separates with speed. You've got Pierre Garçon, who separates with power at the top of the route. And he says, between all of these three things, I can then pick where I want to go and who I want to attack based on what I want to do and how I call the shot. And that is why the skill positions are not really anything to worry about. And in fact, I think are going to be very, very good for the 49ers because they didn't go out and chase this big number one receiver that's really, really difficult to draft, right? Julio Jones does not come along often. And so instead of trying to chase after the white elephant, he said, you know what? Let's go ahead and just find players that can separate, find players that can catch, and I can do the rest. And I think that receiving unit's going to be just fine. And when you get to running backs, I think Jerick McKinnon and Matt Breida both have the distinction of going to Georgia Southern, both also have the distinction of being the best athletes in their respective draft classes. If you look at SPARC, the kind of overall athleticism score for how athletic a player is in the NFL, both of them are in the 99th percentile in athleticism, and it shows. It shows in their speed. It shows in their power. Matt, this is why Matt Breida, as an undrafted guy at Georgia Southern, was able to perform really, really well. He ranked better than Carlos Hyde in DVOA and DR, which are Football Outsiders metrics for measuring running back efficiency and overall quality. And so you're like, okay, cool, undrafted guy. He's fine. He's great. And then you've got Jerick McKinnon, who is he does what a modern running back needs to be able to do well, and that is pass block and receive the ball. This is where running backs are going to give you value in today's NFL. It's going to be in the passing game because the pass is the most valuable play in football right now. This is why the only reason why Todd Gurley is worth the contract he got is because of what he can do in the passing game. And this is why pure runners that are really, really good at running the ball, but either can't pass block or, you know, need to be taken off the field on third down, just aren't nearly as good as your true receiving back. And so I think that the skill position is going to be just fine. And I think it's going to be an asset for the team. And I think people are just sleeping on him because they have this idea of what the skill position should be. Mm-hmm. And those ideas are just frankly outdated.
All right. One more thing before we go to the defense. You've been extremely optimistic, Oscar. So I'm gonna need you to be a little bit of a hater here. You have to say something bad. You have to say something bad about the Juice Chick signing. They gave him way too much money.
Absolutely. You are 100% correct. They paid like 300% of premium on Kyle Juszczyk. And I do think that, again, his skill set, because of what he can do in the passing game, is really, really good. But man, you can't tell me that you can't find another fullback at
you
like.
Could have found him. Like, no one, they weren't bidding against anybody.
Well, supposedly the Jets, your team here, was going to offer him more money.
I believe because the Jets. By the way, this is a weird thing that I don't think people have reported. The Jets had a guy, Lawrence Thomas, who was a UDFA out of USC, who had a really good rookie season as a defensive, like as a fourth or fifth defensive lineman. And this was when they had Wilkerson, Richardson, and Williams, and like even making the team was impossible. It was an absolutely loaded defensive line. Looked great. Second year gets hurt. Then they're like, you know what we could do with this valuable defensive end? Turn him into a fullback. And he's their starting fullback now. He's almost 300 pounds, and he's their starting fullback. So I believe it because the Jets value fullbacks a weird amount, partially because they historically for the last 20 years have probably run more than any team in the NFL. But that I do believe that the Jets were willing, especially with the Jets and the Niners both had $1 trillion in cap space and not enough exciting ideas for what to do with it in some cases. But I believe that the Jets were willing to like make him, you know, the highest paid fullback of all time.
Now, I forget exactly who, but there's actually someone on the Jets that was either on Shanahan's staff somewhere else or he has a Shanahan connection. So they often go after the same type of offensive players, which is why they go. They also were in the McKinnon sweepstakes as well.
Yes.
So they're going after similar types of profile players. And I think that oftentimes the one thing that I am concerned about when it comes to Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch is that when they find a guy that they like, that they think is going to fit their team, mm-hmm. they open up their pocketbook or they trade up in the draft to draft the player, as mm-hmm. opposed to saying, hey, this person has a very particular set of skills to take Liam Neeson's line. And yeah. there are other players with that skill. And they might be, you know, 90% of this player, 80% of this player, but they're like half the cost. So in terms of value, I can get nearly the same amount for not nearly as much. They did it with Dante Pettis, which is why they traded up, I think, to get Dante Pettis. They did.
Pettis
it
was really great. I mean, I don't know how he's looked at. I haven't heard much coming out of him in the preseason and training camp. But he was an exciting player in college, right? He's probably going to be your punt returner, I'm assuming, right? Because he was a great punt returner
yep,
in college.
Absolutely.
And he's just an exciting player. Like, sometimes these guys are awesome in college, and it's like, he's just a good football player. I wouldn't be surprised if like his metrics weren't great, which is why he didn't get picked that high in the draft. But like he might just be a good player.
Yeah, he is. He's another guy who separates with speed, especially off the line. There are so many clips of him in college in the red zone, just completely destroying defensive backs on the line and running a fade run into the end zone. He caught multiple touchdowns that way in college. And so I think that is something the team does is they latch onto a player and they say, no, I have to get this guy. They paid Malcolm Smith $23 million. And he may never play a snap for the Niners because he's been injured. And now you've got Fred Warner, who we drafted, and you've got other players who are playing just as good and aren't costing the team $23 million. So the team has made some kind of bonehead contract decisions.
Yeah.
And I just luckily it's not anything because they had been so terrible previously. They had enough cap space to allow those mistakes to happen. But once they get closer to the top of that cap and they get players that they have to re-sign and pay a lot of money to, that decision-making process could rear its ugly head and cause some problems for them later on.
Yeah. So before we even talk about the defense, actually, your impressions of John Lynch after a year and change. I thought it was an insane hire when it happened because, frankly, he was a very subpar announcer, in my opinion. I don't know if those skills translate. We'll find out because the most subpar announcer is a coach now. We're going to find out maybe if that doesn't matter. But like, there was nothing that he ever did. I mean, he was a great player, but there was nothing he ever said that was like, oh man, this guy, give this guy his own team. And it's, you know, and also because he's a big name and you know, Hall of Fame talent, like he skipped the line. Like, it's not like he was a, you know, capologist who got to become a GM. He went straight to the head of the line. So to me, I thought, oh, this is going to be like just a historic disgrace. And at this point, I don't know if he could screw it up because he's got a really good young quarterback. But like, are you 100% in on John Lynch? Are you sure he knows what he's doing?
I don't know that I'm sure that he knows what he's doing. I mean, we just talked about all the contracts that yeah. he's doled out. And the structure of those contracts is great because we do have a great capologist in Parag Marathe. We actually call him our own Marathlete because he structures contracts so incredibly well.
He's going to be a GM soon, I think people say, right? Also,
I think so. I think so as well. And he'll be more of like the numbers kind of guy. But I think there are different flavors of GMs. And the type of GM that John Lynch became, I think, is a GM who was, humble enough to say, look, I don't know exactly what to do here. So I'm going to find people that I trust who do this very well and rely on them as I grow into being a GM myself. And this is him getting Adam Peters. This is him getting former GM Martin Mayhew. And he uses them and their brains and their knowledge to say, hey, help me out here. And then he also very much works closely with Kyle Shanahan. Now, Kyle Shanahan does ultimately have the roster decision making. Yeah. This is why we ended up with Joe Williams in the fourth round.
I wanted to talk about Joe Williams because one of the most interesting things do you agree? I was doing a deep dive on the Niners today. It seems like and this extends well before the Lynch regime that you guys love to go like boom or bust on some of these picks more than any other team in the league. Like, we're gonna pick a guy. I mean, I guess even going back to like Lattimore, maybe like we're going to, you know, the Solomon Thomas count as Reuben Foster, like guys who maybe had some sort of warts, they fell in the draft or like an injury issue. I mean, is this just me? And it's just a couple examples. Like, it seems like you guys really trying, like, we're okay trying to strike out, but if this guy's good, he's going to be really great. We're going home run or strikeout. Joe Williams is a good example of that, right? Cause he's never played before. Cause he missed the whole year for injury last year. This is his age 25 season, which, I mean, DeMarco Murray retired at 27. So, you know, the clock it might not be ticking. The clock might be over for a running back at 25. Retired in college, right? One day just, like, decided to quit football. Came back a few weeks later.
Quit for a few weeks, yeah.
Yeah, quit for a few weeks. Literally retired from the sport. Came back, ran for 350 yards, because I think they were just out of players. What was the University of Utah? They were out of players. Like, just an insane story. Gets drafted in the fourth round, which is like about as high as like a lot of smart teams are picking running backs usually. I know the Patriots pick one in the first round, but you get the point. And like, this guy is maybe the biggest boomer bust guy ever. Like, there's a chance he never steps on an NFL field. There's a chance he like leads the league in rushing.
Well, I think you've got to separate regimes, right? Because you mentioned Lattimore, and that was Trent Baalke, the previous GM, and that's a whole different failure in decision-making process. So let's talk about like John Lynch really quickly. And I think that you're right. I think Joe Williams fits more into the, we think this guy fits our system beautifully, so we're going to overpay to bring them into the team. It's the same thing that happened with Juszczyk and Malcolm Smith that we just talked about. So I think Joe Williams is more in that mold. And Joe Williams, you're right, there was some risk there. I mean, the reason he quit football, though, was because his sister committed suicide and he had to deal with like the mental health effects of that, that he had never really dealt with for 10 years or 13 years or something. And then, you know, all that kind of cascades on him. And like, it's a legit reason, right?
Sure. But the story is still just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's a bonkers story. And he, unfortunately, is one of the players where if you're going to overpay Juszczyk, at least Juszczyk is, you know, he is kind of filling the role the Niners felt. Joe Williams is not going to make the team. I don't think he's going to make the team. He's going to get
beat
out
by special teams. By the way, so that's a real – listen, that's like – right, because he's probably not a special team guy because I'm sure he was the best player on the field for his whole life.
And Raheem Mostert is one of the three best special team players in the league. Like, his special teams grade is really, really good. And he doesn't offer anything less as a running back than Joe Williams does at this point. The scouting report on Joe Williams coming out of college was he doesn't get any more yards than the line blocks for him. And the Niners' run blocking is not great. It wasn't great last year. I don't know that it's going to be a ton better this year. And so what do you see? You see a running back who is completely ineffective because he has to run behind an elite offensive line. When you look at his boom runs in college, it was a wide open Mack truck-sized hole, and then he was able to use his straight line speed to go 80 yards. Well, those holes are not Mack truck-sized in the NFL anymore. And now you've got to have really good vision and you've got to put your foot in the ground and execute zone runs with a high degree of proficiency. And he's just not doing that. And I don't think the team has, at this point, the roster space to carry that extra weight.
This is a 25-year-old running back rookie. I mean, the, you know, but it just it's an interesting story. I do wonder if he.
Hey, man, if Brandon Weeden can have a job in the NFL at 52 years old, I think Joe Williams can play.
Raise your kids to be third-string quarterbacks, not backup running backs, because backup running backs are out of the league before their first rookie contract's over. And you could be a backup quarterback. Just the key is to never step on the field, and you could be Chase Daniel, and you know, you're going to be 40 and having never played a full season and still be in the league.
It's the fountain of youth, backup quarterbacks.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the defense. We could run through this. You were so optimistic on the offense. Give me reasons to worry about the defense.
Well, I mean, if you are going to worry, it's going to be because of our inability to have a solid group or a deep group of coverage defenders. Mm-hmm. When you think of the thing that has to go well for the Niners to beat their Vegas win total, which is, I think, 8 or 8.5 games, depending on where you go, for them to get 9 games and push for a playoff spot this year, it's got to be because the back half of that defense actually performs very, very well. Mm-hmm. You've got Richard Sherman coming off of an injury, and you know, who knows, even if he's 80% of old Richard Sherman, that's still way better than any defender the Niners had last year. Mm-hmm. You've got Akello Withers of any past coverage defender, because Reuben Foster was ridiculous last year. You've got Akello Witherspoon on the other side, and he is a very, very promising young corner. He is probably going to be the closest thing we've got to a shutdown corner, and he's continuing to develop in year 2. I think he'll be fine. You've got a 7th round pick at safety that played well in limited roles last year in Adrian Colbert. Super fast dude. Again, another guy who's incredibly fast. Takes really, really good angles on ball carriers. But again, a little bit of an unproven commodity and a 7th round pick. And then you've got Jaquaski Tartt at strong safety. Behind that, though, you don't really have a ton of depth. You've got Tarvarius Moore, who's a converted safety to corner this year, who's a rookie. He's a 3rd round pick. You've got some other kind of defensive backs that you even if I said their names, you probably wouldn't know them. And so it's like, okay, let's say Richard Sherman goes down. Let's say Akello Witherspoon goes down. Who's going to step in that role? Jimmy Ward, who is a first round pick, but he's so good that he's the backup to all the positions, which is kind of useless. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you're that good,
I mean, most teams don't have like a good 4th corner, to be fair, also, though.
Yeah, you've got Kaywan Williams, who was very, very good last year. But again, he's not going to strike fear in the opponent's
Pro Football Focus liked all of your secondary players. Sometimes these things come in clumps where like they just grade well for some reason. But like every one of your players graded out as above average, even the nickelback.
Above 80, yeah. And Kaywan started out kind of a little on the crappy side, and then he got better as the year went on. I think you do have sample size issues to worry about, but you then also have this pass rush issue, because pass rush and coverage grades kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And DeForest Buckner is one of the most underrated players in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he might break out this year. I agree.
Yeah, I think he is very, very underrated. He led the league in terms of quarterback hits for interior defensive linemen last year. And I'm not saying that he's better than Aaron Donald, because Aaron Donald is on his own planet.
Yeah.
But DeForest Buckner is an elite interior 3 technique player. The problem is, we have no one else on the edge who can provide pressure. We signed Jeremiah Atauchu from San Diego, and I just watched his game tape against the Texans, and he couldn't generate pressure against, you know, 2nd and 3rd string offensive linemen. There's a reason that they went out and got Joey Bosa. And so he's not going to do all that well. Dakota Watson, Cassius Marsh, these are all castoffs from other teams. And the Niners are like, yeah, these guys are going to generate pressure. The best pass rushing edge guy that we had last season I'm not even going to forget his name. I don't even have the brain space.
What about Solomon Thomas? Have you mentioned him?
So Solomon Thomas is going to be better this year, mm-hmm. but he's going to be someone who is going to need to kick inside on the defensive line. Elvis Dumervil, by the way, was a guy I couldn't remember just a second ago. But Solomon Thomas is going to need to kick inside on pass rushing downs, and that's where he'll be most effective. He's already a pretty good run defender on the edge, and especially if he plays on the weak side, a defensive end position, which is where he will line up, because Eric Armstead's going to be on the strong side. Mm-hmm. He's going to dismantle right tackles one-on-one. It's going to be really fun. And then on obvious passing downs, he'll kick inside. And that's where he will generate some really, really good pressure. But interior pressure is not as valuable as pressure from the edge. Pressure from the edge is where you get more strip sacks. It's where you get more drive-killing sacks. And that's not to say that pressure in and of itself isn't good. But if you're going to get really, really valuable, good pressure, you're going to get it from the edge. And the team doesn't have that right now. And so what does that mean? That means that then the coverage defenders have to be a little better than a coverage defender who has Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. And so that's where those two things complement each other. And if the pass rush isn't there, then the coverage really needs to be there. And right now, the coverage is kind of a little like shoulder shruggy. It's like, we hope it's good, but everything has to break well for it to be really good. And what do we know in the NFL? Not everything breaks your way.
Yeah. All right. I want to go before we talk about the Niners over under and where you think they and this year. We play just a wildly popular game that's sweeping the nation called the roster game. I don't remember if we played it with you last year. We don't do it every episode. But basically,
we did play it last year, and so you asked me about a player from Texas A&M.
What was his name?
Oh, God. I forget his name already. I just remember that he was from A&M because the only reason I knew him was because my wife is an Aggie. And so we kind of just pick out the Aggies on the Niners. So it's one of those things where it's like that. I knew him at that time. Uh-huh. Again, I've slept anymore. Since then.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So pick a number between 0 and 100, Oscar.
Ooh, man, 0 and 100.
And you're not picking jersey numbers. We got a whole formula here.
Yeah. I would say 23.
23. All right. Who is Mike Person?
Oh, Mike Person, backup guard, actually presumptive starter at right guard right now, because he actually was drafted or was an undrafted free agent for the Niners originally when he started his career, bounced around the league team to team, and then came back around to the Niners this year because our right guard situation is unsettled. Josh Garnett, first round pick, may not even make the team if he doesn't win the right guard spot. And the team signed Jonathan Cooper as well. Ooh. And they signed Mike Person really to be the backup center, but he's pretty versatile in that he can play both right guard and center. He played right guard last year, but now has been running with the ones at right guard this year. Yeah. And hopefully Josh Garnett wins that role, but if he doesn't, then I'm looking at Mike Person to be the starting right guard and the backup interior center for the Niners this year.
Your center also is the Giants' old center, right? Weston Richburg. Yep. I think he's a pretty underrated player. I think he's a solid guy.
I agree. The last healthy season Weston Richburg had was, I think, 2016, because he didn't play in 2017 because of some concussion stuff.
Yeah.
And so it was either 2015 or 2016. But the last healthy season that Weston Richburg had, he was the highest graded center for Pro Football Focus's overall grade. And he is ridiculously athletic. He's able to get those reach blocks that Kyle Shanahan needs for the outside zone runs. I just tweeted out a clip in the game last night where he's able to get that reach block and flip his hips and seal the nose tackle off. And it just, I mean, offensive linemen shouldn't be that athletic, and he's able to do it, and he's able to track guys in space and knock them in the face. He's going to be a good center, I think, and he's going to help the line a lot.
All right, awesome. Okay, so I think their number's 8.5. Is that correct? Their win total over under for this year?
Yeah, their win total, depending on where you go, their Vegas win total is 8.5.
Yeah, I mean, 8 makes more sense. 8.5, you know, you seem to be pretty optimistic on them. That's it's just a high number for a team that hasn't really done it yet. They're obviously a very trendy team right now. I think the real analytically inclined people are almost certain that the Rams are going to have a come down, and if you don't like the Seahawks, like, someone's got to get to 10, right? And I personally think the Rams are probably that someone, but I'm guessing you're going
I
over.
Agree with you.
I'm guessing you're going over for 8.5.
Man, I think for 8.5, I actually might take the under. I think they get to 8 wins. I think a couple things are going to have to break their way to get to 9. We actually did something very similar on our show, and I think we used 8 as the over-under, and I went over just because I thought, you know, like, 8's At 8.5, you can get to 8 and still be right. At 8, if you choose 8, you push, and so you lose. And so I'm like, screw it. Stake in the ground. You have to go over or under. So I went over at 9. I do think the Rams still win the division. I do think the Rams still get to 10 wins, even if they regress in a lot of major categories, because they will. I think they're going to hit the plexiglass. And so I think the Rams are still going to win, and I think the Niners are going to come second in the division. And Seattle, I think, is going to probably end up around 8 wins. But I think you could see 3 teams in the NFC West that are 8 or more wins, and the division's going to be that good all around. So I'm going to go ahead and say if the over under you're giving me is 8.5, I'm going to say under, because I think they'll get to 8 wins. But I think, just because there's a little bit of fan in me, I say, you know, screw it, the over, they'll get to 9.
Looking at their schedule, the league is definitely excited about the Niners being good again. You guys have
five primetime games
in a very short span, and really from week 6 to 13. You're going to get a lot of Jimmy G. Hopefully not a lot of CJ Beathard. I mean, you guys could single-handedly ruin. I mean, that's like October and November. Because December, a lot of teams are eliminated. It's tough. It's tough to get great matchups. In September, everyone's 0-0, 1-1, and the matchup can only be so bad. You guys could single-handedly ruin the NFL this year if Jimmy Garoppolo gets injured. Now, I have an idea.
Oh, yeah.
because I'm a Jets fan, and fans are allowed to make trades. I don't know if you know about this, but if you guys want, I'm willing to offer you guys Teddy Bridgewater for a second round pick as a backup.
No, I think for a second round pick, I mean, at the rate at which we're able to acquire players,
yeah.
I am going to get Julio Jones for a second
That's
round
true.
Pick.
That's true. That's a good point. You guys,
if I can get a starting quarterback for a second round pick, yeah, why couldn't I get a starting wide receiver for a second
true,
round pick?
True, but
this is the market that Bill Belichick is setting.
Listen, it's hard to win without your quarterback. You know, the Packers last year, it didn't happen, and it's not like they went out and got the best backup on the market. They're like, listen, we're not winning without Aaron Rodgers anyway, so God bless Brett Hundley. Do whatever you want. I feel like you guys are doing the same thing. And not that every team can have a competent backup. Brian Hoyer at 80 years old, I wouldn't consider back. Although I'm not sure if he's even winning. Is he winning that job in New England? I don't even know if like Loletta or one of those guys is doing it. But God bless you if CJ Beathard has to play.
Oh, yeah.
Because now the book's out on him. Not only is he bad, but everyone knows.
Nick Mullins, I think, is a better quarterback than CJ Beathard, and Nick Mullins isn't going to make the team. I think the only reason that Beathard is on the team is because, again, the team loved him. They overdrafted him in the third round, and I think they're going to try to flip him for a pick here in a year or so. But yeah, dude, if Jimmy Garoppolo goes down, it's like, well, all right, pack it up.
Okay.
Let's audition some players.
There's 20 teams in the league that could say that. Like, are the Lions okay if Matthew Stafford goes down? No. Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Part of winning, and one of the, you know, the best, this is an anti-Eli Manning podcast, but, like, you know, Eli has never missed a game.
That's because you guys are sane individuals.
Right. Yeah, no, but a lot of people, especially New Yorkers, are think Eli Manning is competent, and
Eli Manning's cooked. I think Teddy Bridgewater is good enough to start for probably half the team.
Well, the thing is, and it stinks because my team has never had a quarterback, and now it looks like we might. And now, like, there's 24 teams that kind of have a quarterback. But
yeah,
so I get what you're saying, but like a lot of teams don't need Bridgewater, which is why he was so available. Whereas 5 years ago in this scenario, Bridgewater would have gotten the Bradford deal of like 1 year 20 or like 2 years 30 or something insane. Bridgewater looked fantastic last week. My co-host is a Vikings fan who like worshipped Teddy Bridgewater, highest December passer rating in the history of the NFL. I think the Jets can't, like, they're not going to keep him on the roster, but I also think teams know that the Jets aren't, because Josh McCown's making $1 trillion, and you can't have like your entire cap go to three quarterbacks. It doesn't make sense, especially
Mr. Athleticism himself, man. Josh McCown.
Yeah,
he's
harder to trade
athletic.
Because his there are very few teams, like your team probably has enough cap space, and maybe like the Browns, but like the teams that are interested can't afford to trade for him. Like, that's why trades are so hard, because guys who are good and make a lot of money are basically untradeable during a season, right? So they structured Bridgewater's contract to make him tradable. And there was talk that maybe they could just keep him on the roster and get a supplemental pick, but compensatory pick. But like, he would need to get an obscene contract, and why would he get that unless he played? It doesn't make any sense. Like, why would no one pay him last year? And I know, like, other than his knee being healthy, like, then he wouldn't have played for three years.
I think what we know about quarterbacks is that everyone thinks they have their guy right now, and I think by week 8 or 10, we're gonna realize that. There's going to be a certain contingent of people who thought they had their guy who were flat out wrong.
Sure. And first of all, we got five rookies, right? Lamar Jackson, he could stink. Sam Darnold could stink. Baker could stink. Rosen could stink. And Allen does stink. So, you know, like any of these guys could be flops. And then three or four teams are going to lose their quarterback. And then what happens?
Then Bridgewater's going to come in, and he's going to take a team to a playoff push, and everyone's going to be like, oh my God, it's a resurgence. How did we not see this? And it's like, it's because you weren't looking, because he's that good.
Yeah, Bridgewater's really good. And he's 25. Like, he could have such a long
career. I know, and he's
still
young, and he's got one of my favorite nicknames too, Teddy Two Gloves. Yeah, I love that nickname.
He's like, he's a good guy. The players seem to love him. Yeah, I think Bridgewater is interesting. It's interesting, right? It's interesting that he basically fell to just a team that had extra money to hand to him. All right, I think we are good here. Oscar, you did a great job as always. Sometimes we talk to teams in the playoffs. I'm not sure if we would be talking to a Niners fan, but it's possible. I'm looking at the schedule. That week one, if you could ever win that game in Minnesota, God bless you guys, because it really opened up. I know.
We don't have Reuben Foster the first.
It doesn't matter. They don't have. They might not have a team. Like, every day they're losing five guys in practice. Like, you.
Yeah, I mean, their players that they lost, I think, were second stringers and third stringers. Luckily.
I know, but Zimmer couldn't even. He's like, I can't even give you an update right now because I don't even know. Like, we lost so many guys. I don't even have a list in front of me. I think it opens up a little bit after that stretch, Oscar.
They could. I think they open the first probably five games, they end up 2-3, maybe even 2-4, because the game against the Vikings probably lost. Steelers probably lost.
You're gonna, Cardinals, if you open up 2-4, it's going to be a long year. Because, and I know you have some easy games, because
then you open up 2-4, but then you end up getting the Seahawks. I think we're both similar on the Seahawks, where I think they're kind of figuring themselves out again, and they're ripe to get beat. Mm-hmm. Depending on who the Ravens play at quarterback, if they end up playing Joe Flacco at quarterback, yeah. I mean, come on. So, and then you've got, you know, it's going to be a different year.
Well, you don't have the Ravens on the schedule. You have the AFC West. I spoke earlier.
Yeah.
But you do. So you have the Chiefs. You have the early. You have the early AFC West swing where you go to Kansas City and then the Chargers version of LA. There are a lot of winnable games on the schedule, and then there's a lot of really hard games, like the two games against the Packers and the two games.
But they're all at the end of the year. Yeah. When you get to the end of the year, that's when you get to like the Bears, the Rams probably lost, but you get to the Seahawks, the Broncos, the Buccaneers, the Giants, the Raiders, the Cardinals, and three of their last five games are at home. Mm-hmm. So I think the story for the Niners next year is going to be an early slip where it's like, oh, my God, this team that everyone thought was going to be the darling of the NFL. Like, oh, they're having a really, really rough start. And then once they hit the middle of the year and they get the bye week, then they're going to tear off a bunch of wins and they'll push for a playoff spot late. And everyone's going to see them as like, oh, they're the team we don't want to face in the playoffs. And then whether or not they make it, who knows? But I think that's going to be the story for the Niners in 2018.
Yeah. Well, how about this? December 30th, 9-6 Niners against the 10-5 Rams. You got to go to L.A. Everyone knows, hard to beat the Rams in front of that diehard, lifelong Los Angeles Rams fan crowd. But that could be that Sunday night game for the division. Loser misses the playoffs because the NFC is so good. You'd sign for that obviously.
That sounds exactly right. That sounds like a story that is likely.
Listen, you'd sign for it right now. A game to make the playoffs in L.A.
Oh, yeah. And especially because McVay and Shanahan, I mean, that's like two elite chess masters going head to head. I'm here for that.
I wouldn't want to be Arizona right now.
No,
I wouldn't want to be. I mean, and also Seattle. Like, listen, Carroll's old. Russell's great, but they're going to have to rebuild that whole team. Like, there's not a lot other than the quarterback to build around. It's a good division. Listen, let's tie it back into what we started with. It's a really good division. There's a reason I ranked it first. Well, Josh Rosen might be amazing. Also, he could be incredible. We have no idea.
I'm not worried about Josh.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, imagine, you know, if we've got Goff, Jimmy G, Russell Wilson, and a good quarterback in Arizona, it could be an absurd division for a decade.
I think if Bruce Arians were still there, I would say Josh Rosen's the perfect fit, and that makes a ton of sense. But without Bruce Arians there, I'm less worried about the Rosen experience.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Oscar. Everyone can find them on Twitter at Better Rivals, the Better Rivals 49ers podcast. He's a good follow on Twitter. Podcast is good. They're about to cover the just mentioned Arizona Cardinals. I know that'll bring all the listeners. That'll probably be your number one episode of the year, the Cardinals preview. All those.
If trends continue as they are, that will be false.
Yeah, the listen, there's 12 Cardinals fans. Not like you know, maybe you should get Will Leach on. You ever ask him to come on the podcast to talk to the Cardinals? He's a big Cardinals guy.
All right, we'll talk deets afterwards.
Yeah. All right, Oscar, you're great as always. Thank you so much for your time, and best of luck to the San Francisco 49ers this season.
Thanks, man. All right, bye. It's easy to fall.